It's Wednesday, September 6, 2023, and this is KBIA's Views of the News. Our weekly roundtable on media behaviors comes to you from the Futures Lab studio at the Reynolds Journalism Institute. I'm Amy Simons, and here with me are my journalism school colleagues, Nick Matthews and Ernest Perry. On our program this week, the latest chapter in the raid on that Kansas newspaper, legal action threatened by one and taken by another. A close encounter with AI prompts the Gannett newspaper chain to drop its experiment using a tool called Lead AI to write up Preps Sports. And when getting a little cheeky on social media creates a big problem. But we're going to start with a local story that had just about everyone talking last Thursday afternoon, and it wasn't Mizzou football, though we'll be talking about that a little bit later. The Treeline Music Festival, known around here for nearly 20 years as Roots and Blues, was canceled. The organizers, citing cost overruns, is the reason. And my first thought when I heard this was, well, what did they expect? Didn't they learn from New Coke, from HBO Max, from Twitter? Rebranding is not the answer when you're looking to keep your customer base.
Yeah, you know, it's very interesting. Was it the rebranding that caused this? Was it time of year that caused this? Was this certain changes in the type of acts they brought in that caused it? Could it have been a major sponsor that pulled out that we don't know about? I mean, there's so much that we don't know about what happened. That's why the story continues to have legs.
Well, and it does continue to have legs because, Nick, I really got the impression as I was reading the stories and have been continuing to look for them that so much of that coverage has been the music festival's PR line. We aren't really digging any deeper to find out what's really behind what's happened here.
I mean, I think your point is true. And that's when you were looking at the questions that you were just talking about. I was like, yeah, those are stories that we need to do. Like, we as an industry need to do. I mean, and so it's been pretty surface level coverage to the best of my knowledge. And the best piece I've seen is actually the one from the Missourian where they talked about the impact on the local businesses here in this community. So it is because Treeline is not just a music festival. It's so much more to our community. And when those things get lost, I mean, we have to understand that from that perspective.
And it has for a long time been almost as big as a football weekend when we think about some of those names that would be drawn to the mid-Missouri area. I know Mavis Staples has been here in past years. Salt and Pepper was on the card for this year.
Jody Messina.
These are big names that aren't otherwise coming to this region.
Yeah, I mean, to me, one of what jumped out to me is that when you think about this area, along with the sporting events that Mizzou brings in, you talk about True False Film Festival and you talk about Roots and Blues. Those are the events that sort of pop
anchor.
Out.
They anchor yeah, our absolutely. City's so, cultural center.
Right. So going back to your opening about the rebranding from going from Roots and Blues to going to Treeline, when that first came out, I don't think there was enough questioning as to why did they do that? And they said, well, you know, now that we move from the downtown area out to Stevens, we thought that the trees and that would be more representative of what we were doing. And I'm like, but wait a minute, you had a brand. And now you're trying to change the brand. What was wrong with the previous brand that you had that made you then think to go to this other brand? And it goes back to the point that you made, which is, okay, if you're going to rebrand that, then you need to promote that heavily. And I don't think that they did enough of that either. I mean, I think it just got lost because it wasn't Roots and Blues.
Well, and so much of this, again, is coming back to, I mean, I personally, like, I'm not a huge music fan. I was going to go. This is my first year here in Columbia. I wanted to be a part of something special, and that's what this is. These are, just as you said, these are cornerstone events in our community. They build our community, our community's identity. And so to be a part of that is something special. And from internally, when we lose these events, I mean, this has a devastating impact on our community's identity, bringing in people from external to show, you know, and more so to even remind us, Columbia's a pretty dang cool place to live, right? And that's what these events are. And when you don't have the event and you don't have the news coverage, frankly, that helps create these enduring memories for us, I mean, I think devastating is not too strong of a word.
Yeah.
And I know again, it's not about us as journalists, right? Ernest, that's your line, right?
Right, right?
But I also think about all of the journalists who we are training here in the school. And for a lot of our students who work for Vox magazine, that is the cornerstone of their work in the fall semester, right? Planning that large scale coverage, carrying it out, and what it takes to do that on the week. I'm not saying that they should have the music festival for the sake of us having something to cover, but that's also another part of what's getting lost here too.
Yeah, I mean, that's getting lost, you know, to me, there, along with the fact that we don't have answers to the questions about, as you know, what led to them canceling, we haven't heard anything from them about, okay, will this be coming back? Will it be coming back as Tree Line? Will it be coming back as Roots and Blues? Are we going to do this again? What's happening to all the sponsors who had basically stepped up and said, hey, we're going to support this? Are they going to be willing to support whatever happens next year, if there's going to be anything to come next
year? I was going to say, or does this become the impetus for a reimagining? Does this become an every other year event? Is it reshaped in some way to serve the community and bring people in a different way?
Right, right, right. And it's almost as if, you know, the organizers of it have pretty much gone dark. Mm-hmm. They haven't really said anything other than what they said last week. And I think that there needs to be some more delving into this. And I'm sure that the local news outlets, including the ones that we operate here at the School of Journalism, are looking into it, hopefully, to find out, okay, is there more to this than just the expenses of it? And I know the insurance went up for a lot of these events. I do know that the acts themselves are probably asking for more money, but that should have been expected.
Yeah. Well, and these events run on a razor's edge financially all the time anyway. So if you lose, for instance, if you lose $250,000 stadium sponsor, $500,000 stadium sponsor, that's enormous.
Right.
And so that, we don't know. That was your first point. Right. We don't know the answer to that. And, you know, to the point where, why Tree Line's gone dark, usually when you don't have good news to report, you don't want to report it, right? And so that's where our institutions kind of come in. And so it's been fascinating to see how, like, the piece that's caught my attention probably the most in the coverage so far was John Darko's cartoon. I don't know if you guys saw that in the Missourian, where it was the day the music died.
Yeah.
Probably not the best of comparison, because that was Buddy Holly in 1959 actually dying in a plane crash. However, the point is true. I mean, about how substantial of a moment this was for our community.
And how it could be figuratively compared in that way.
Right.
The staff at the Marion Record has moved into the next chapter of the fallout from last month's raid, a federal lawsuit. Deb Groover is a reporter at the paper and the person who Police Chief Gideon Cody served with the search warrant. She's also the reporter who questioned him about alleged misconduct at his former job. Now, she's saying that he retaliated against her and is seeking damages for the emotional distress, the mental anguish and physical injury that resulted from his, in her words, indifferent violation of her First and Fourth Amendment rights for taking her cell phone during that raid. Meanwhile, the lawyer for the newspaper is also threatening action, demanding that the police not review any of the documents from the since returned devices, that the Canvas Shield Law requires that there be a hearing before that.
Yeah, I mean, and that going all the way back to, we've been talking about this, I think this is maybe the third time we've talked about this on the show, the hearing, which should have taken place before the raid, that didn't take place because you had a judge who, if you listen to all the legal experts, said maybe this judge didn't know what they were doing, but they never should have gone there in the first place. So now you're leading to, you know, lawsuits by the reporter, you know, threats by the counsel for the newspaper, and we're back to square one. What does this really all mean? What was this all about? And we're still trying to put all of that together, but it just seems to be some sort of drama between the newspaper, which was covering various stories having to do with the police chief and others in the town, and their unease and downright disgust with what the newspaper was doing that led to where we are right now. And we're still trying to figure it out.
Well, and there's so much chaos that comes behind this because every state's rules are different.
Yeah.
I mean, and that's the biggest thing. It's like Missouri, for instance, no shield law whatsoever. Kansas has a different one. Texas has a different way of doing it. And so it's not difficult to understand why there could be some confusion here, even, you know, from with people, especially outside the area, looking toward Kansas to try to understand Kansas' situation. And so there's no federal shield law, right? So, I mean, it comes down to the individual states, and that's led to rather chaotic situation.
And the interpretation of those exactly. of those shield laws by various judges yeah. and other law enforcement officials. I mean, that's part of the problem as well. Mm-hmm. I mean, you can have one, but the media operation may look at that shield law differently than the people who are executing warrants and, right. and requesting various information all the way down the line.
Well, and it gets confusing even to the matter of, like, what state shield laws are we looking at, you know, depending on where the media outlet is based, where the sources are based. Like, all these kinds of variables make it extraordinarily difficult situation to analyze.
Yeah.
Okay. So it's been a minute since we talked about AI. So let's do so. Last week, the Gannett newspaper chain dropped an experiment that it was running using a tool. Nick's already smiling and laughing. Using a tool called Lead AI to write up high school sports stories. Now, we have one of them that's on our links blog that has been removed from the newspaper that was originally published in the Columbus Dispatch, but is available through the Wayback Machine archive. And the cliches that kept showing up in some of these stories. And at one point, one of them even said that the teams had close encounters.
It was the first encounter of the athletic kind.
There you go.
That's pretty special.
There you go. The big criticism here was an attempt to cut some corners really did little more than embarrass the publications that were doing it.
Yeah, this is where you don't want to be the beta tester
okay.
for a new chatbot box or whatever you want to call it. You just don't want to be there. It's almost like, you know, you want to be the person with the new iPhone 6 months before they do the...
Why you never buy a car in its first model year.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. And the problem here is that for them, you're talking about Friday night football, which is important to a lot of these communities. I mean, it's the one area where local news, in particular local, both local broadcasts and local print, get the bulk of their of some of their advertising. They get the bulk of some of their exposure is on that.
We've also talked about that strategy too, back to when I was covering high school sports, because every kid whose name shows up in the paper, their parent, grandparent, neighbor goes running to buy them, and you get more print sales too.
And to use this, because I don't want to use this expression, but I think it fits here, to cheap out.
It is,
on
though.
Something that's that important to your viewers and your readers, I just don't understand it. But it's a corporate decision. And so Gannett made the decision that they were going to do this because it saved them money on salaries, and which is, you know, salaries are their biggest expenditure, and it saved them money. But I think in this instance, it's going to cost them, because here you are at the beginning of the season and you're pulling that experiment back, which means now you're going to have to go out and hire people to go and cover those games.
So, go ahead now.
Well, and I was going to say, the difficulty here is with high school sports. Like, I was a sports journalist for almost 15 years. Mm-hmm. Like, there is a nuance that comes to statistical analysis yeah. of high school sports that doesn't come from others. Like, even back in my time in Houston, this was going about 10 years ago now, I mean, there was AI involved in Major League Baseball box scores.
Agates have been done using AI forever.
For a long time, not only through sports, but also through things like you know, S&P and
right.
Dow Jones and all the market information as well. High school sports are dramatically different.
Right.
Statistics are inconsistent.
Right.
You know, coaches, the winning coach, by the way, is the one who sends in statistics to the news organization normally. And that would mean, okay, maybe the losing teams as statistics aren't
maybe
accurate.
Maybe not as accurate.
Right, exactly.
Right. And Ernest, you bring up another point too, because I hear you when you say you don't want to use the term cheap out. But when you're moving to AI to write the story. Okay, fine. So you've cut out that reporter, that stringer, whoever you would be sending out there. Where's the copy editor to catch some of these things, too? There should have been multiple sets of eyes before this just fed directly into a content management system that puts it live somewhere.
No, absolutely. And how are you getting that information? I mean, the again, and we talked about this in the last show.
Yeah.
AI is working with the information that you provide AI. And if you're only providing it, say, with the rudimentary stats that you got from the winning coach, then AI is going to put everything else together and throw it in and hopefully come up with something that's readable that isn't full of cliches. But if you didn't give it enough information to do that, the cliches is what you're going to get.
Well, and the thing that I've been making the point when I have had conversations about AI is AI is a terrific tool for journalism. It is not a replacement for journalism.
Yeah.
And so that's what you're talking about, is so many of the organizations are trying to think of it as a way to cut costs, et cetera.
I've done some work with public school communications professionals and talking about the ethics of AI. And there was one public school system that has started using it more regularly in the development of their communication products that they're putting out to families in their districts. But they characterize their use of AI as almost like hiring an intern. It can help with certain tasks. It can make things a whole lot easier because it frees you up for some of the bigger tasks, and it needs the output needs to be gone through with a fine-tooth comb because you can't always trust the intern to get it right without a whole lot of guidance along the way.
And it's made for story ideas, story improvement, not story origination.
Yeah.
And so that is the significant difference. And when we get to the idea of story origination, and then you combine that with the lack of people on the back end, then you're getting AI content going straight out the door. Now we're seeing this is coming up.
So The Guardian has joined a bunch of other big name news organizations in preventing ChatGPT's parent company, OpenAI, from crawling its content to help feed the machine learning. And there were an it wrote a story explaining its reasoning for doing that. And The Guardian also published a series of really interesting letters to the editor from some of their readers who think that's a really bad idea, who see this as an opportunity that if they collaborated a little bit more, that what they could be doing is helping the machines learn accurate information and fighting some of that disinformation that's flooding the zone.
You know, collaboration sounds great, but I know where The Guardian's going here.
Okay.
And The Guardian is going in the direction that the Wall Street Journal went into when basically when the internet began, when you started having, Google and others who basically came in and took content and put it up for people for free, and they weren't compensated. The Wall Street Journal said, no, you're going to compensate us. We're going to put a paywall up. The Guardian is basically doing the same thing with ChatGPT and all the other AI. They're saying, wait a minute. We've been burned once. We're not going to get burned again. If you're gonna troll our information and use it in your space, then you're gonna pay us for it. That is exactly what's going on here.
And you're very nicely bringing up this moment in time because we're looking at things like the Online News Act in Canada that is dealing with what you're talking about, about Google, Facebook about news organizations trying to get compensation from them. This is just another moment of it, and we're going through it at the exact same time. You're talking about other news organizations too. We're talking New York Times, Washington Post have been the ones who have said that they want to block this as well. And I completely understand it from both perspectives. I want to champion the media organizations, get the compensation they deserve. But on the back end, I kind of agree with the folks who are writing the letters to the editor too, that when you put in a higher quality of content into ChatGPT, a better quality comes out. And so you know, for a societal purpose, you kind of understand it from both perspectives anyway.
Yeah.
Okay. So for this next one, you would have to go way back to remember. But in 2011, the then St. Louis Rams social media team released this video. You can see it yourself on YouTube.
Fans, we want to have the loudest stadium in the NFL.
To help us all come together as the 12th Ram, we've created Ram Rules.
Follow these 5 rules to give our team dome field advantage.
Together as one, we can do it.
We can do it!
Ram Rules!
And because part of being a social media manager is to be edgy, or so they tell me, Mizzou Athletics decided to recreate that video using the same music, only subbing out the five rules. Take a listen to rule number five.
This is rule at the zoo number five.
Once that clock hits zero in the third, it's officially the fourth. Put those fists up. It's our chance to unify Perot Field and propel our Tigers to a win.
Okay, so unless you are super keyed in to Rams fandom from 12 years ago, getting this joke is going to be a long shot. I mean, pointing out to people that at the end of the third quarter, that means it's the beginning of the fourth quarter, it's just kind of making Mizzou look dumb to the outside.
Or at least very naive. And so that's one of the things. My impression when I first watched this was, okay, you know, everybody else in the SEC is going to laugh at this.
Everybody else in the SEC is laughing at this.
They did laugh at us. If you look at some of the roundups of tweets and posts, that reaction from Sports Illustrated.
So to maybe make matters a little better, I mean, additions of, okay, this was designed to help people who have never seen football before. Or this is a nod to the 2011 St. Louis Rams who went on to win the Super Bowl. Like, any of these kinds of additions in that content would have helped explain it a little bit more than we have now.
Yeah, good luck with that.
Yeah. Right.
I looked at this and I went like, what were they thinking? Think about the conference you're in, right? And how's this going to look to the rest of the conference? How's this going to look to potential opponents?
Well, amateur hour.
And here's the thing. Mizzou Athletics has been doing some good things lately. Phenomenal. This is not one of them. This is the one that, you know, okay, going into conference play, you're going to see this in stadium after stadium when we're on the road. Mm-hmm. And, I don't know. All I could do is shake my head when I saw it.
It was I guess one of my first thoughts was how many people this went through to actually get accomplished. Like, so this goes from idea generation to execution to approval to beyond approval again. And then we're looking at it going out loud and proud on social media as well.
Well, what about the 12 students that were in there? And just pulling that number. But if you were to look at the video, there were easily how many people that were in it that were like, none of them thought it seemed a little weird that, like, we're literally explaining what the clock running down and starting.
This is how we expect you to cheer at a football game. And I'm a season ticket holder. Mm-hmm. I go to every football game, and I can tell you that there are other fans there who hate the third down part of it, where they play that same song over and over again, and it gets in your head and it drives you crazy. So, to me, it was just one of those things where you shouldn't have to tell people who go to games what to do when they're there.
And if you're a new fan, you're probably going to figure it out by the end of the first or second game. Yeah,
first or second quarter.
I gave them too much credit.
I mean, it was cringeworthy, right? It all just kind of made us.
Okay, so speaking of cringeworthy, I want to take us back even further to this classic football moment. Remember this from 1996?
I've called the president. President, we need a National Guard. We need as many men as you can spare because we are killing the Patriots. So call the dogs off. Send the National Guard, please. They need emergency help. Please help these folks. They're coming.
That was Shannon Sharp poking some fun at the expense of the New England Patriots during a blowout win. One can only expect or hope that that is what the social media producer for the University of Central Florida was referencing when they posted this tweet showing a player on the sideline on the phone, sent during the team's blowout win on Thursday. The text says, "Someone call the National Guard." Only the team that UCF beat? Kent State. And I'd want to say, how does this even happen? But we know how it happens. We have people who want to be edgy on social media, but don't have that historical knowledge.
Yeah. That's how that happens, is that we forget our history, or we weren't taught our history. I mean, Well, you're never too young to know the history. There are opportunities to learn that. But again, going back to a point that you just made, who went through the checks? Somebody should have, and caught it, or no one did and they just posted it. I mean, that therein lies the problem. There needs to be checks and balances.
Right. And I mean, this actually made that point, that tweet made me think back to news organizations as well, who put, frankly, they sometimes put young, tech-savvy people in these roles who lack, to your point, lack local knowledge and, frankly, lack journalistic experience, too. And so it's kind of a dangerous position to be in, because they are whoever's in that social media account is the voice of that account for the university on that time frame. Tremendous responsibility.
There are going to be some instances where having institutional knowledge is going to be great. The person who did that had encyclopedic knowledge of football.
Right.
To be able to even think about that 1996 clip or joke about Shannon Sharpe and bring it back. But I also think about every history class I ever took, and I don't remember ever getting past the end of World War II in a U.S. history course. To even think about where or how I first learned about what happened at Kent State.
Right. No, exactly. I mean, and one of the things that's missing in a lot of our history is when we talk about the protest movement, we talk about certain things, but Kent State is one of those things, that one of those events that comes up often when you talk about protest movements in the context of history. So to me, it goes back to, like you just said, I remember this. This clip of Shannon Sharpe and how funny it was, but the Kent State part, either they didn't get it or it didn't resonate at the time. That, wait a minute, think about the opponent. Think about all of what you're doing in context.
I was just about to say, Ernest, I'm waiting for you to say context, because that's Nick's new here with us. That's Ernest's other big thing. It's not about you, and we need to have context. That's what is missing here.
Right, right. And even in
context in social media world is extremely difficult anyway.
Exactly. Right. And that's the point I was going to make. And I've talked to social media experts about this, and that's one of the things that they grapple with all the time is that because people are trying to put this information out in real time, the idea of how do you put it in the proper context gets lost so often that then they find themselves in this sort of cycle where they're having to throw context in later. But there's no guarantee that people are going to go back and get that.
Often as an apology.
As what happened here. Before we go today, it has been great to have Nick with us.
Thank you.
Going to call on him to come back. Trust me. We do look forward to that. You'll be here again in a few weeks and many times, hopefully, in the future. A quick word on why Kathy is not here today. Yesterday, she welcomed Nobel Prize laureate Maria Ressa for the inaugural Olive Lundgren Lecture Series on Press Freedom, which was held at the National Press Club in Washington, D.C. More than 20 journalists living in exile here in the United States attended the event, along with some of the friends and family of jailed journalist Evan Gershkovich. We look forward to hearing more about this event from Kathy when she returns next week. We are just about out of time for today's program. I would like to thank you for spending the last half hour with us. We invite you to read more about each of the topics that we talked about today. You can learn more about them on our links blog. That's located under both the programs and podcast tabs at kbia.org. We're also available wherever you get your podcast downloads, including iTunes, Spotify, and Stitcher. We invite you to like us on Facebook or follow us on X, formerly known as Twitter. Our handle there is @viewsonkbia. These are all great ways to watch and listen to our program again, leave comments, questions, see previews of what we'll be talking about next week, and more. Our thanks to RJI's Travis McMillan for directing today's show, to Takiya Thomas for handling the audio, Tim Pilcher, who composed our theme music, and Nate Brown, our social media manager. I'm Amy Simons. Join us again next week for another edition of Views of the News.